Get on up and get on down. It's time for another Wendell's World of Sports production. So let's get funky as this brother right here begins to rap. Before the start of another episode that will explode with strong opinions and entertainment, let me present another Wendell's World of Sports production that is heaven sent. Wendell's World in Sports, a sports talk podcast presented in audio and video form to perform to the scorn of the haters and entertainment creator like Pete Rock and CL Smooth that I groove to the flavor of the podcast being soulfully chocolate. So if you have plans to beat me, please just go ahead and stop it. The opposition, I'll lambaste them, then debase them, disgrace them. More futile than someone trying to guard Jason Tatum, giving the competition hurts like Jalen. I'll be wailing and assailing any clown that tried to quote my show verbatim. If you try to test me, I'll be a global champion like the GOAT Lionel Messi, laughing at the notion that you thought taking me down would be a breeze like Drew, not having a clue that you've come into a gunfight with a butter knife and rolling the dice just cost you your broadcasting life. Listen to my podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, or iHeart as I listen and tear apart the fabric of the conventional nonsensical, ripping to shreds the threads of stale, plain, tame, lame, flatline podcasts that are being left way behind. So take this loss to your podcasting boss, because going up against me, the call of my fatal verbal blow would be best described by the legend, good old JR, Jim Ross. Wendell's World of Sports, download, subscribe, rate, review, most importantly, enjoy the most unique, entertaining, thought-provoking sports talk podcast that you could ever listen to.
Sports fans of all ages, faces, and places from every stadium, arena, and auditorium all over the world. May I have your attention, please?
Well, time's coming when we're going to have to ante up. Ante up and kick in like men. Like men!
It is now time to bring to your listening ears, hearts, and minds a sports podcast named Wendell's World in Sports with the one and only Wendell Wallace.
Tell him how you feel.
A podcast that gives you strong, passionate, unapologetic, uncompromised thoughts and opinions about the everyday happenings in the NFL.
Mahomes looking to flip, takes it in. Touchdown.
And college football to the NBA in my Georgetown Hoyas.
Giannis fires one down at an exclamation point for Milwaukee.
To any other sporting news of the day. And now, introducing the man whose love of sports was born and bred on the greatest Muhammad Ali, Lynn Bias, Magic Johnson, Bernard King, and Eric Dickerson, Wendell Wallace.
It's been a long time. I shouldn't have left you without a strong podcast to step to. Think of how many weak podcasts you slept through. Time's up. And I'm sorry I kept you. Wendell's World of Sports, I'm your host, Wendell Wallace. So glad that you could be with us. Good morning, good abend, bonjour, bonsoir, que pasa, shalom, wassalamu alaikum, konnichiwa, namaste. Welcome back. I'm speaking about myself. I'm sorry. In the words of the song of Otis Redding, I've been sick, y'all. The week before I didn't do a podcast, I just wanted to give myself a break because I was going on a cruise. So on the cruise, I want to thank Marvin Prather and Linda for inviting me on that four-day cruise. Went to Catalina Island, went to Ensenada, just a nice little four-day cruise. But on Wednesday of the cruise, that Wednesday night, I got sick as a dog, man. I woke up in the middle of the night. My throat was on fire. It was hard for me to swallow. It was terrible, man. I don't know exactly what happened. I don't know where I got it. No, I didn't get it from anything as far as Ensenada is concerned. No, nothing like that. But I just woke up feeling terrible. Luckily for me, next day I was going to be at sea, so there was going to be no more ports. So I tried to get myself the best I could to get back in shape. But, Thursday was still rough. Friday was terrible. Saturday was terrible. Still had the opportunity on Sunday to get strong enough to see my boys, Puerto Rican Chris Ortiz and Mark Lord. Special dedication to them. But other than that, man, I've just been trying to recover from this cold that I got. I don't know what it is, man, but I've been coughing up so much phlegm. Goodness gracious, man. It's just been a pain in the ass. So that's my reasons for not doing a podcast for the last couple of weeks. But I'm back. I'm back. I'm going to do the best I can. So if occasionally, hopefully occasionally, if you hear me coughing and wheezing and sneezing and sounding unpleasing, it's just me trying to get rid of the last remnants of this cold that I have. So there you go. Hey, man, during my absence, I hope that you did everything that you need to do. Come on, man. The thing's still, nothing's changed in terms of my edict, what I want y'all to do, what I want you to do. What are we doing to change this world, huh? What are you doing to change this world? I don't give a damn about your race. I don't give a damn about your gender. I don't give a damn about your religion. I don't give a damn about what side of the tracks that you're from. I don't give a damn about what side of the globe are you from. I don't give a damn if you worship a god or not. I don't give a damn if you worship religion or not. I don't give a damn about any of that. I don't give a damn about who you love. I don't give a damn about who you identify with. The only thing that matters to me in my world is love, peace, unity, harmony, empathy, togetherness. That's what I care about. That's the only thing that I care about. I don't give a damn if you're Baptist. I don't give a damn if you're Muslim. I don't give a damn if you're Jehovah's Witness. I don't give a damn if you're Mormon. I don't give a damn if, well, worshiping the devil might be a roadblock. But for the most part, you know, anything that emotes love and unity and harmony and understanding and respect and wisdom and intelligence amongst other peoples, man, that's good enough for me. That is good enough for me, because we have too many things in this world today that divide. Religion divides. The Bible divides. Political affiliations divide. Racism divides. All of those things divide. You know one thing that doesn't divide? Love, unity, wisdom, intelligence, respect for others, empathy, sympathy for those who want to receive it as well as dish it out. That's what brings people together. That's the thing that's going to unify us, and that's the thing that's going to make this society better. So I hope that you're doing that. And also, before I get into what's going on in the world of sports, as always, man, I don't know where you're listening to this podcast. You could be listening on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon. I don't know. Do me a favor, though. Wendell's World of Sports. Download, subscribe, rate, review. Most importantly, enjoy the most unique, entertaining, thought-provoking sports talk podcast that you can listen to. Do you like how I had that little pause in there just for dramatic effect? The most, yeah, the most unique, entertaining, thought-provoking sports talk podcast. If you could do that, Wendell Wallace Jr., moi, would be the happiest human being walking the face of the earth. I know that we have to speak about what's happening in the college basketball tournament, but here's what I'm going to do, because I know that the center stage, I know that the star of the show, I know that the leading lady, I know that the numero uno when it comes to college basketball this season and now into March Madness for both the men and the women has been Caitlin Clark. Not the University of Iowa, because I'm quite sure if you're not like a fan, a deep, deep fan of women's college basketball, you ain't going to know anybody in terms of the Iowa women's basketball team. You ain't going to know the coach. You ain't going to know the players. You ain't going to know the history. But you do going to know who some Caitlin Clark is. So Caitlin Clark has been the story. Caitlin Clark has been the foundation. Caitlin Clark has received all of the spotlight, all of the shine, all of the attention for the most part. Some has gone to LSU, some has gone to Ken Mulkey, some has gone to others, Juju Watkins, but for the most part, the television execs, ESPN and such, are begging and pleading and thanking Jesus or anybody else that you worship, that thank goodness that Caitlin Clark is still in the tournament. Because without Caitlin Clark, despite my girl Paige Beckers, who I love dearly, despite Juju Watkins, and despite the South Carolina Gamecocks with Dawn Staley, the best coach in America, sorry, Gino, but, you know, without Caitlin Clark, women's college basketball is not receiving this much attention. And you could even say, for the most part, that when you speak about the extra attention that's been given to women's college basketball, I can probably say it's about 70% Caitlin Clark, and then you divvy up the 30% amongst the others that I just mentioned and some others that I probably didn't. My thing about the women's game is this, and I know that we have to sit there, and I know that it's, you know, I don't know if it's PC, or I don't know if you have to say this because you don't want to be known as a chauvinist or whatever, but I know that you have to sit there and go, oh, yes, the women's basketball tournament has been great. It has been fantastic. Caitlin Clark is awesome. I cannot wait to see another game with Caitlin Clark. Forget the March Madness with the men's tournament. I think that the women's basketball tournament led by Caitlin Clark has far exceeded the excitement level of men's college basketball. I just now love me some women college basketball, and it is about time that finally the women's college basketball game is reaching the level that they deserve, because before it was all about denial just because of their gender. But now, because of Caitlin Clark, and Caitlin Clark is so great, she is one of the greatest basketball players of all time, regardless of male or female. I think that she is great, and she has done great things for the women. You know, we have to go on and on and on and on about this. Here's what I'll say about the women's college basketball tournament. I tried watching LSU versus Iowa. I'm recording this on a Tuesday morning. I tried watching the game last night between Iowa and LSU. I tried for about a quarter and a half. And let's be for real, Tuesdays is kind of a slow night. Mondays is kind of a slow night. You know, nothing on the Food Network channel was moving me. Nothing on the other cooking channel was moving me. Andrew Zimmer and his Bizarre Foods episodes really wasn't moving me. There really wasn't anything else on. Modern Family wasn't on, so I didn't have a chance to watch any of their reruns. So there was really nothing else on. I know that the NBA TV had a couple of games, but I wanted to, you know, just see what's happening with the women's college basketball game before I eventually turn back to the NBA game. Now here's what I'm going to say. I tried watching the game. The most anticipated rematch when you're speaking about college basketball, not men's or women, regardless, right? Iowa versus LSU. If you remember last year, Angel Reese, the center for LSU, and, you know, she's talking all type of shit and talking all type of trash and this, that, and the other, and she actually talked trash to America's sweetheart for about another, 10 minutes, Caitlin Clark. She talked trash and this, that, and the other, and all the drama, all the nonsense. You have two of the best players in the women's game going at each other, two of the best teams in women's college basketball going up against each other, so the storylines were there. But here's my deal, man. I just want to watch good basketball. None of that stuff really concerns me. I really don't give a damn. I want to see good basketball. I don't care if it's from the high school level. I don't care if it's from the college level. I don't care if it's from the NBA level. I don't care if it's from teams in the European League. I don't care if it's from the Australian Basketball League, the NBDL. I don't give a damn. I just want to see good basketball, high-quality basketball being played. And that game really didn't show me anything in terms of high-level, quality, entertainment basketball that I wanted to watch. It just doesn't. Now, maybe it's because I've just been a creature of watching men's basketball for so long that the women's game really doesn't excite me, really doesn't interest me. Not to say that I don't respect Caitlin Clark. I think Caitlin Clark is fantastic. I hope Caitlin Clark cashes in on everything that she deserves. I hope that the spotlight continues to shine on Caitlin Clark. I hope the women's game, both in college and in the WNBA, continue to grow. I want to see the college basketball game for women become extremely successful and extremely popular. Just because I don't find it interesting doesn't mean I want the league to fail, or just because I want the sport to fail. Just because I won't watch a WNBA game doesn't mean that I'm rooting for the league to fold or anything like that, or I'm going to make fun of the league or anything like that. But it just seems that, you know, if you just don't give sometimes your honest opinion in terms of saying, look, I just don't find the women's game interesting. Caitlin Clark, for a female, is a fantastic basketball player. Yes, for a female, she is a fantastic basketball player. Yes, one more time, I will say, for a female, Caitlin Clark is a fantastic, wonderful basketball player. For any gender, as far as skill-wise is concerned, she's a fantastic basketball player. In terms of shooting, in terms of ball handling, in terms of decision-making, in terms of being a basketball player, male or female, Caitlin Clark is a terrific basketball player. But in terms of the overall of my viewing and enjoyment in terms of watching basketball, I prefer to watch the men. Doesn't mean that I'm chauvinist. Doesn't mean that I want women to go back into the kitchen barefoot and fix me my dinner. Doesn't mean any of that stuff. Doesn't mean that I'm not down with Me Too or I'm not down with anything that's going to advance the situations concerning women in this country and this world and this society for the betterment of women. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying for me, I prefer to watch the men's basketball. I prefer to watch men play basketball. Just like any other sport. That doesn't mean that I hate the other sports. I love watching women's tennis. Especially when the Williams sisters were doing their thing. Especially when, you know, when you had those rivalries with the Williams sisters and their rivals throughout the years. You know what? I enjoy watching women's tennis. If you want to sit there and have me watch MMA and see two girls put on their skills as mixed martial artists, fantastic. I love it. Wonderful. I'll watch it. But just in terms of women's basketball, no thank you. So for me to sit there and go on and on and on and talk about how wonderful Caitlin Clark is as a basketball player, and because she is a fantastic basketball player, and in the totality of things, in terms of the overall, when you take a look at her skill, when you take a look at her athleticism, when you take a look at all of those things, and equate that to the totality of both men and women, a fantastic basketball player, yes, but is she on the same level as a male basketball player in the totality of what you want to see in a basketball player because of her physicality, because men are different than women? No, I don't find Caitlin Clark entertaining enough for me to skip over the men's basketball game, whether it be March Madness, the men's tournament, or a men's basketball game in college or in the NBA. Sorry, man, that's just the way it goes. Again, don't paint me out to be just, oh, you pig, this, that, and the other. It was all that bullshit you were talking about. Regardless of gender, we can all get along. Yeah, sure, we can all get along. I want to see, I hope Caitlin Clark does her thing. I hope Iowa or South Carolina or Connecticut. I love Paige Beckers. Woo, man, do I love me some Paige Beckers. When she won that award and she repped and she was talking about the black women in the sport, and you know, she's going to do everything that she can to bring light to some of the accomplishments of black women in sports. I just said to myself right there, I'm in love with Paige Beckers. Love me some Paige Beckers. I want to see Paige Beckers. If it ain't going to be the South Carolina Gamecocks with Don Staley winning the championship, I want to see me some Paige Beckers win an NCAA championship. I love me some Paige Beckers. But I'm not going to watch. So, Paige Beckers, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, all of these women right now, Juju Watkins, all of these women right now who are getting that shine, who are getting that attention right now. I think it's awesome. I think it's fantastic. Continue. I want to see more of it. I don't want to see more of it, but I want them to get more of it. I want to see Juju Watkins on more commercials. I want to see Paige Beckers on more commercials. I want to see Caitlin Clark on more State Farm as their commercials. I want to see all that kind of stuff. Because when then they go into the WNBA, that means that the WNBA is going to get some more shine. So now you have the Kelsey Plums, and you have the Angel Reese's, and you have the Breonna Stewart's, and you have these other fantastic female basketball players now getting more and more attention because of the influx of talent and the attention that follows to go from the women's college basketball game to the WNBA. So fantastic. I love it. I want all of that to happen. I want these women to become multi-millionaires. I want these women, when girls want to play basketball, instead of saying, I want to be the next LeBron James, or I want to be the next Steph Curry, or I want to be the next Luka, or I want to be the next Giannis or stuff. I want these girls to be able to say, I want to be the next Juju. I want to be the next Caitlin. I want Caitlin Clark and those gals to go by the one name, to be referred to as one name. You know the name LeBron, for the most part. You know the name MJ. You know Luka. You know Giannis. You know the Joker. You know these. For sports fans, we identify those guys with those names. I don't need to say the Joker and you go, who? Heath Ledger? No, fool. I'm talking about Nikola Jokic. Oh, I don't need to say LeBron and you go, who? Y'all don't need to say Steph and you guys go, who? You guys know who it is if you're sports fans. I would love to have that same thing for females. So when I say Caitlyn, I don't need to say her last name. Y'all already know who she is. When I say Juju in 3 or 4 years when she's in the WNBA, I don't need to go Juju Watkins and explain who she is. Hopefully she'll have that shine. She'll have that attention. She'll have that platform. She'll have that foundation to where it's just Juju. Oh, yeah, Juju Watkins. That bitch can play. So it's a situation like that. Same thing with Angel Reese. Well, that's a fine-looking woman, and she can ball, and she's strong, and she has great self-confidence in herself. All of these things, I hope, come to fruition for these females. I'm just not going to be one that's going to be watching the games. That's all. So there you go. Wendell's World in Sports. I'm your host, Wendell Wallace. So glad that you could be with us. Now, the NCAA basketball tournament has been going on in my absence. March Madness. Has it been a successful March Madness? Because now we've gotten to the Final Four. The meat in terms of determining what makes a great March Madness is the first couple of weeks, or the first weekend, really, of the tournament, right? Isn't that where we go in terms of if we're going to measure if it was a great tournament or not? Because we always go with the Cinderella story, right? All the Cinderellas. That's what makes the tournament, right? That's what makes it the greatest tournament on earth and all this other bullshit that those guys on CBS and True TV and TBS and others that they're being paid to say. This is what makes the NCAA tournament so great. The fact that the Cinderellas can go ahead and do some things. Now, let's be for real. And like I said, it's the same bullshit as Las Vegas. It's a 24-hour town. Really? And not where I live. Not in most communities. Maybe down on the strip, maybe. But you go 2 miles off the strip in any direction, it ain't no damn 24-hour town. You try finding some place to eat outside of a fast food joint after 9 o'clock out here. Everything is closed, right? You know, go grocery shopping. Anywhere, right? Them things are closed at 11 p.m. for the most part. I think Smith's now is open till 12. Go to Walmart. Walmart now, because folks have been stealing so much stuff out here that they close now at 11 p.m. So when people talk about Las Vegas, it's a 24-hour town. Yeah, if you want to go to a strip joint, or yeah, if you want to go to a McDonald's to get something to eat, or yeah, maybe if you want to go to the gym to work out, there's a couple of places that are open 24/7. But for the most part, it's bullshit. When you talk about, hey, Las Vegas, 24 hours. Same thing with the March Madness. What makes March Madness so great? It's the Cinderellas. There's never been a Cinderella. At least my definition of what a Cinderella story is. What, Wendell, then, is your definition of a Cinderella story? My story, in terms of my definition of a Cinderella story, is the one where at the end, right, in Cinderella, she was a wench. She was sweeping up the floor for the evil stepsisters, and then the stepsisters went to the prom or to the dance or whatever to meet the king, and then the Cinderella had the fairy godmother who turned her into a beauty, and then she went to the dance, and the king was like, hey, I can get with this bitch, and then it hit midnight, and oh my goodness, she had to turn back into a pumpkin, but she left her glass slipper, and then the king said, hey, one of you wenches left the glass slipper. What's going on here? What's happening? And then they went to the evil sister's house where Cinderella lived, and they said, hell no, no, couldn't have been that girl. She ain't nothing. She's a clown. She's this, that, and the other. And they put the slipper on her feet, and oh my goodness, it's really you. And the king and Cinderella, who then became a queen, lived happily ever after. And hopefully the first thing that Cinderella did when she became a queen was to say, take my evil stepsisters and throw them into the dungeon for life. The moral of the story is Cinderella had the happy ending, right? I mean, everything came great. You know, she faced some adversity. She didn't think that she was going to go anywhere, do anything, but she went from scrubbing floors and being abused by her stepsisters to being married to the king and having this wonderful life and blah, 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 right? That's my definition of what a Cinderella story is. Name me something similar like that in the NCAA tournament. So for me, a true Cinderella story would be a team that wasn't expected to do anything actually won the NCAA tournament. That's my definition of a Cinderella story. Anything else is a good story. Everything else you could put on Lifetime. Anything else you could put on, you know, the Hallmark Channel. Wonderful. But that ain't a Cinderella story. So these teams who upset the Dukes and the Michigans, or not Michigan, not Michigan this year, but the Kentuckys and the higher seeds from these mid-major to low-major schools that no one knows of because no one really is paying attention to Grand Canyon, no one's paying attention to Siena a couple of years ago, no one's paying attention to George Mason in 2006, no one was paying attention to Loyola Marymount when they made the Final Four, no one's paying attention to Davidson when Steph Curry was on that team and they made it to the Elite Eight. Nobody's really paying attention to any of these squads. Doesn't mean that these squads are any good. We don't know if they're any good because we're so busy concentrating on the Blue Bloods. We're concentrating during the regular season on the Blue Bloods, on the Kansas, on the Kentuckys, on the Dukes, on the North Carolinas, and those type of teams that we don't have time in March. We don't have time in January. We don't have time in November to be checking out to see what Oakland, no, not Oakland from Oakland, California, but Oakland from someplace in Michigan is doing. We don't have time to be checking on to see what type of players are playing for Grand Canyon. We don't have the time or the inclination or the desire to check on some of these mid-major schools that are pretty good basketball teams, especially in the day and age now when you have the transfer portal and you have a lot of these blue bloods. Kentucky comes to mind, where a lot of their best players are not staying even 2 years. They're going after one season to the NBA. So, you know, so the success of a March Madness is defined by the Cinderella story, even though if you take a closer look, there has never been a quote-unquote Cinderella. And yes, I know folks are going to bring up, well, what about North Carolina State in 1983? What about Villanova in 1985? If you're in a Power 5 conference and you make the NCAA tournament, you're not a Cinderella story. I don't give a damn if you do win it. I don't care. If you're in a Power 5 conference or Power 6 conference, if you're from the Big East or the Pac-12 or the Big 10 or the Big 12 or the ACC or the SEC, and you're in the tournament, don't give me some nonsense about, I can't believe we won or this is Cinderella that you won. You're competing not just with the Blue Bloods in terms of playing them twice a year, you're playing in the tournament, you're recruiting the same type of player. You're going after those same five stars. Now, most of those five stars are going to be going to the Kentuckys, are going to be going to the Dukes, are going to be going to the Kansases, are going to be going to the squads that constitute, make up the definition of a Blue Blood, right? Or one of the best college basketball teams in the country, because for the last couple of years, Gonzaga has fit that mantle pretty well of being a Blue Blood, even though if you take a look at their history, they are far in terms of the historical presence and the historical impact that they've had on the game of college basketball when you compare them to Kansas, when you compare them to Kentucky, and you compare them to those other historical programs. But yet and still, you know, those teams are not Blue Bloods. When North Carolina State won the NCAA championship in 1983, that was a team that preseason was going to be ranked in the top 25. But because of injuries to Derek Wittenberg and Sidney Lowe, who at the time constituted one of the best backcourts in college basketball at that time, took them some time to gel because, again, because of injuries, they didn't have their whole squad when they were losing 11 games during the regular season. Lorenzo Charles was a guy who was a freshman, who was a high-recruited player for North Carolina State that year, played as a freshman. Lorenzo Charles was another guy. Thurl Bailey was the number one draft pick who played in the NBA. So North Carolina State of 1983 was far, far, far from being this nobody knows about, out of the blue, never heard of them, no way they could compete with these guys type of a basketball program. Villanova, who won the championship in 1985 when they played my Georgetown Hoyas, and then the McLean brothers were all coked up when they played in that game. That was a team that took Georgetown to the wire in 1985 during the regular season. This was a squad that had Ed Pinckney, who was the number one draft pick, the McLean brothers, who were very good basketball players, Harold Presley, who I believe played in the NBA for a little bit, and Harold Jensen, who was one of the better shooters in college basketball. That was a team that also, in the preseason, had high expectations. So to beat Georgetown, the McLean brothers, being the drug addicts that they were, got themselves hooked up on drugs so they could go ahead and beat Georgetown, which should be an asterisk by Villanova, because that's the only way they ever should have, that's the only way they beat my Georgetown Hoyas. As you can tell, I'm not, you can tell I'm over that. I'm still. But my point is that don't give me a squad from the Power Six conferences and put a Cinderella by them. So that's the reason why, just like everybody in the media for this upcoming Final Four is going to be concentrating on NC State, right? I believe NC State was a lower seed, and they had to win the ACC tournament to get into the NCAA tournament, and they did this and they do that. I think during the regular season, I think they beat Duke. I mean, so this is a team that's not coming out of nowhere. This is a team that had to find themselves. This is a team that had to gel. Kevin Keats did an awesome job, the coach for NC State, to get them together. But again, you're speaking about players that are on NC State's teams that were being recruited by some of the high majors and blue bloods of college basketball. So this is a situation where NC State is not going to be coming into this tournament. NC State is not a program that's going to be littered with 2- and 3-star recruits or transfers that are coming in that are at the bottom of the barrel. I mean, this is a program, this is a basketball program in NC State that has competed with the Dukes and the Carolinas and others for the longest of time. So again, I'm not interested in, oh my goodness, I can't believe it. This is just so awesome that NC State Cinderella, and I know they're going to bring up Jim Valvano and that game where they beat Houston and all that type of stuff, but it's not the same. So when you speak about the most notable upsets this March Madness season, again, Yale, the 13th seed, they beat Auburn 78-76 in the East region. Oh my goodness, that's awesome. James Madison, the number 12 seed, they beat the number 5 seed at Wisconsin in the first round of their tournament. Oh, this is wonderful. That's awesome. Cinderella, Oakland, number 14 seed, beat Kentucky 80-76. Oh, that's just wonderful. Cinderella. Grand Canyon, the number 12 seed, they beat St. Mary's 75-66 in the first round of the West region in their tournament. Oh, this is wonderful. This is awesome. This is good. What happened to Yale? What happened to James Madison? What happened to Oakland? What happened to Grand Canyon? Can you really be a Cinderella? Can you really be a story? Can you really deserve the attention and all this type of stuff when you only win one game? One game? I mean, James Madison beat Wisconsin, then how much did they lose to Duke? What, 40? Really? Oakland goes ahead and beats Kentucky, then they lose to NC State. Grand Canyon loses to beats St. Mary's, and then who did they lose to? They lost pretty convincingly. So Yale loses convincingly in the next time that they played. So what was the big yippity-yah-yoo-ha in terms of their first-round upsets? I know the brackets are all, the ESPN brackets are all torn apart and they're all this, that, and the other. I don't care. I don't do that bullshit. I don't do that nonsense. I'm not in the brackets and I'm not in the bets. So why do I care? Just give me the best teams when everything is all said and done. I want to concentrate really quickly, though, before I move on. Kentucky losing to Oakland 80-76. And I spoke about a little bit, if I didn't, let me reiterate. I spoke about, you know, the Cinderella and upsets now in college basketball during the tournament, blah, blah, blah. It's a lot different because of the transfer portal and also because of freshmen one and done, right? Now, if you're Kentucky, and I know Calipari after the, John Calipari, the coach of Kentucky after the game, after the loss to Oakland, was sitting there and he was speaking about, hey, you know, I mean, this is what happens when you're average age is 19 years old and you're playing against guys who are 24, 25 years old. Man, ain't nobody, John. Nobody on Oakland. That average squad wasn't 24, 25 years old. Stop it. But, you know, but basically what he's saying is that every single year, I'm coming in with a new team basically full of teenagers, right? Because we bring them in. They're all 5-star recruits. They're all one-and-done prospects. They played a year of college basketball. They're done. And then I got to go out and bring in another top 2, top 3 class from high school basketball to play for us. The same thing, it's reciprocal. Same thing's going to happen. They're going to come in. They're going to play their 1 year. They're going to be drafted in the NBA. They're going to move on. So I'm reloading every single year. I'm not reloading after 2 or 3 or 4 years like it was back in the day, because the majority of my best players that I'm recruiting are leaving after 1 year. So it's hard to build any type of chemistry. It's hard to build any type of culture. It's hard to build any type of chemistry when you're Kentucky and your main recruiting pitch to these five-star, top 10, top 20 college, high school basketball players is, hey, if you come to Kentucky, we'll do the best to get you in the NBA as quickly as possible. If that's going to be your main shtick, and for an 18-year-old, I mean, who has dreamt about being in the NBA, and a lot of these players who are coming to Kentucky, who are five-star basketball recruits, who are projected lottery picks, they're coming from disadvantaged situations where, yeah, the thought of me being a millionaire in 6 months, 8 months, 1 year, yeah, sounds pretty good to me. And hell, I don't care. You could be the Fresh Prince from Beverly Hills. You know, you're speaking about in a year at 19, 20 years old, I'm going to be a millionaire playing the sport, playing in the NBA, playing my dream, living up my dream. Of course that's highly toxic. Of course that's going to lure those type of players. The only problem with that is it doesn't build any type of culture. So when you're Kentucky and you're constantly reloading with 18 years old, whose main mindset is, I want to do what I need to do to get myself the highest draft position, to get myself into the highest draft position possible so I can go into the NBA. Well, when you come across a team that's been playing together for 2 or 3 years, and yeah, you have guys that are 21 and 22 years old, and you have guys on Kentucky, again, who are sitting there talking about, well, you know, I'm just here so I can get myself ready for the NBA. Doesn't mean that they don't want to win. Doesn't mean that they don't care about winning, but it's a different type of mindset when you're playing against a lower-seeded team with players who have been 3-star recruits, 2-star recruits. Maybe in today's transfer portal, a mid-major might get a player who was maybe a 4-star recruit who didn't work out at one of the major college basketball programs. So he had the opportunity to transfer to a lower division or a mid-major and put up some high numbers there, again, for them, looking out for their opportunity to get an opportunity to play in the NBA. So all of these things come into play. So when you're speaking about Calipari, yeah, you better hope that the draft class that you're bringing in is historic, and hopefully of the 4 or 5 or 6 high-level, 5-star, all top 50 type of recruits that you bring in, hopefully 2 or 3 of them, because all of these guys that come to Kentucky now are thinking about one and done, right? Because that's Kentucky sale pitch. Kentucky isn't going after 2-star recruits. Kentucky isn't going after 3-star recruits. Kentucky isn't going after guys who are ranked 123 in the 24/7 basketball rankings. Kentucky isn't going against, is not recruiting some clown ranked 98th in the ESPN.com high school rankings. They're not. They're not going after that. They're going after guys that they can put into the NBA as quickly as possible, and that's what they're telling them. So hopefully, these guys who maybe don't live up to those expectations, because what, for the last 3, 4, 5 years, ever since they entered 9th grade, the thought of one and done have been put in their minds by their parents and by adults and by scouts and by recruiting folks and by college coaches, right? They've been talking about one and done, one and done, one and done, one and done. So when you start believing that, then you go to that school and you walk in there and you say to yourself, ooh, wait a minute now, I don't think I'm going to be one and done. Most of the time, either the player, either the parents, either the hanger-oners say that, well, it's not your fault that you're not in a position to be drafted, or it's not your fault that you're not averaging 20 points a game and being talked about in the top 10 in these NBA mock drafts. It's not your fault. It's the coach's fault. He lied to you, blah, 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 blah. So even these recruits who are being recruited by Kentucky, half of them go to the NBA after 1 year. And then there's probably the others who just say, well, you know what? I should be with those guys. I'm just as good as those guys. You promised me that I would be in the NBA in 1 year, which I'm clearly not in a position to be. So you lied to me. I'm angry at you, and I'm leaving to move to go on somewhere else. So they transfer somewhere else. there's very few who sit there and go, oh, you know what, maybe the experience of playing in Kentucky and getting a degree and doing all those type of things, and maybe after my sophomore year, maybe after my junior year, if I put in more time with the NIL money that I'm getting, that the collective that I'm getting now, I don't need to rush to the NBA. I can just stick it out. I mean, there's few that do that, but for the most part with Kentucky, you're either going to bolt after 1 year, or because you're butthurt because the promises that were made to you, you feel were not... you didn't have the opportunity to get them, you're going to get butthurt, and your handlers and your dad and your mom and your stepdad and your agent and everything else is going to say, go somewhere else. And you can get paid just as much or even more moving on to this school. So, you know, that's the deal with Kentucky. But, hey, guys, guess what? You ain't buying out John Calipari. Not unless you want to pay him $34 million. Calipari is like, cool, pay me $34 million. I don't need to put up with this shit. Go ahead. You want to get rid of me? $34 million, bitches. And I want it all. Well, maybe we can negotiate. No. I want it all. And you know Calipari's like that also. So, you know, hey, that's what it is with Kentucky. But that's what it's all about. So, you know, this whole nonsense about Cinderella and all this type of stuff, to me, it just doesn't happen. Notable Cinderella runs, as I mentioned before, George Mason. Right there in Fairfax, Virginia. My homeboy, my childhood friend, Steve Smith, played for the team, George Mason, back in the day. George Mason, 2006, they made the Final Four. They defeated Michigan State in the first round, then North Carolina, the number 3 seed, then Wichita State, the number 17 seed, then the UConn Huskies. I remember that was Rudy Gay's basketball squad, the UConn Huskies. Rudy Gay from Maryland. Thought he was going to Georgetown, but whatever. George Mason made it to the Final Four before they lost to Florida. Patriots entered that season into the tournament with a 23-7 record, losing against Hofstra in the final game of the regular season. So that was a surprise, but not a Cinderella. The VCU Rams, who came into the tournament in 2011, ranked or seeded number 11 in 2011. They defeated USC. Then they beat Georgetown, and that was kind of like the end of me watching the 2011 NCAA tournament back in the days when Georgetown actually made the tournament and back in the days when it was like a disappointment when Georgetown would lose in the tournament. Woo, boy, that seemed so long ago. But VCU defeated the USC Trojans, then Georgetown, who was number 6. Then they defeated number 3, Purdue, then number 11, Florida State, then number 1, Kansas, before losing to the Butler Bulldogs. That was Gordon Hayward's team in the Final Four. In 2018, the number 11 seeded Loyola Chicago Ramblers, they defeated number 6 Miami, the number 3 Tennessee, the number 7 Nevada, the number 9 Kansas State before losing to Michigan in the Final Four. So I'm looking for my definition of a Cinderella. There's never been one. There's never been one. Penn, way back in 1979, made it to the NCAA Final Four, where I think they lost to Michigan State with Magic Johnson and Greg Kessler, like 101-69. some nonsense like that. You could say that Indiana State with Larry Bird, that was a Cinderella squad that almost fulfilled the true definition of Cinderella. And they had one of the greatest players who's ever played the game. They couldn't get it done. So, you know, no different. Who's ever going to win this tournament this year, it's going to be a situation where they earned it. Connecticut, is anyone going to beat Connecticut? They're going to play Alabama in one semifinal, ran off 30 straight points in the second half. I didn't see one timeout taken by Illinois in the Elite Eight game where they won 77-52. I didn't see Brad Underwood call one timeout during that 30-0 run. Really, coach? I mean, you gave up on your squad that quickly? I don't know. I mean, how in the world can you not call a timeout? Maybe get Randy Shannon the ball? Maybe call a play for Randy Shannon? Do something? Because your team was rattled. Your team was on the ropes. Your team was done. Your team was what was it took a shot, and it was on Queer Street in terms of they didn't know what was happening, and you're just sitting there like whatever. I don't know if you're waiting for the media timeout, but it was a surprise to me, like, this man's not going to call timeout, huh? So UConn has the best chance to become the first team since Florida in 2006 and 2007 to win back-to-back championships. The other semifinal game is going to be Alabama. I'm sorry, Connecticut's going to play Alabama, who beat Clemson 89-82. And then the other semifinal game, Purdue versus NC State, big man matchup of Zach Edey versus DJ Burns Jr. I'm interested in watching this game just to see what Zach Edey's going to do. As a big man, I mean, look, against Tennessee in the Elite Eight, 40 points, 16 rebounds, 13 to 21 from the field, 14 to 22 from the foul line. You know, Burns scored 29 points, had 4 rebounds, 3 assists, was named the South Region's most outstanding player as he put the Wolfpack, NC State Wolfpack, on their back, on his broad shoulders to beat number 4 Duke. Kyle Filipowski. He's supposed to be a top 15 draft pick or a late lottery draft pick. All I see is a lesser version of Frank Kaminsky to me. I'm sorry, I don't see it. I see a guy who might be 7 feet tall, but I don't see any athleticism. I don't see any consistency from the outside, a.k.a. the three-point line, to make him a stretch forward or a stretch center. I don't see the size and athleticism for him to be playing center in the NBA. And like I said, I don't think that he had the shooting prowess to be a stretch four. Now, I don't know. I don't know what's going to be happening. I know that he can put on weight and he's still young, but Kyle Filipowski, I was sitting there going, really? This guy is supposed to be, This guy in one of the mock drafts of the Wizards at one time were supposed to be interested in him, huh? Don't see him. The Wizards with their number two draft pick. So I don't see it. Don't see it at all. And that's the same thing with Edey. I mean, Zach Edey is a guy who's supposed to be, you know, catapulted into the first round of the NBA draft because of his performance. Based on what? Based on what? I remember the game that I saw Purdue in the tournament where they played against Grambling, and Grambling had some guys out there who, you know, couldn't guard that man. Man's too big. And they're sitting up there going on and on about how great he is. Come on, man. Come on. Anybody, that game against Grambling that Zach Edey played against, nobody. He will not play against that level of competition ever again in his life. There's nobody that was guarding him from Grambling that's going to be playing professional basketball anywhere on the globe. Finland, New Zealand, Iran, Darfur, Spain. Name me a country that has professional basketball league. The folks from Grambling ain't good enough to play in that league. So, yeah, Zach Edey tearing them up? I would hope so. But these commentators were sitting there talking about, oh man, this guy, Zach Edey. It's like, just come on, man, give me a break. So, I'm watching the game against Tennessee, and I'm like, counter move, because Tennessee was playing him to the right when he got the ball in the post. And because of the size mismatch that he had, he was forcing the action or scoring action to his right hand, his right shoulder for the jump hook or whatever. And I'm sitting there going, all right, spin to the left, go to the left. They're overplaying you to the right, counter to the left. Not once did he do so. Now, look, Zach Edey in the NBA, I see a career for him. I see a guy who can have a 10, 11, 12-year career in the NBA. I think if he plays 12 years, I think he'll play on like 8 teams. I think that he can be a fine backup center. So his lack of scoring, that's not a concern, because in the NBA, once he reaches the NBA, they will never, ever call one play for him to get the ball in the post and for him to score. The coach in the NBA, or how many coaches that he plays for, will never call a play where it's, you know, five on the block, or, you know, five deep, or they throw the ball to him on the block and let him go to work. That's not going to be his role. His role is going to be spelling the center, congest the lane, set some picks, get some rebounds, and block some shots. And you can do that for maybe 8 to 10 minutes a game. That's going to be Zach Edey's career in the NBA. He ain't going to be making all-star teams. He ain't going to be scoring 15 to 20 points a game. He's not going to be doing any of that. He's not going to be the starting center on a team that's going to win the NBA championship or make the NBA playoffs. He's going to be a journeyman backup center who's going to be asked to use his size. And I'm quite sure by the time that he fully matures as a basketball player and as a human being, that he's going to be much stronger than he is right now. So to use your size, use your girth, use your height, use your length to disrupt shots at the rim, to grab rebounds, to set picks, and keep Nikola Jokic somewhat, rested by the time the fourth quarter comes, or Joel Embiid, or Victor Wembanyama, or whatever great center he's going to be backing up. But he'll never be, or Chet Holmgren, he'll never be a starting center in the NBA. But it'll be interesting to see the matchup this weekend, him versus DJ Burns. Looking forward to it. So the Final Four is set. You heard my thoughts and my feelings about the women's college basketball. Just not into it, man. And one more thing that I want to hit before I take my boogie break. I'm thinking about DJ Burns versus Zach Edey. You know, the first thing that came to my mind when I saw them two, when I thought about them two going up against each other this upcoming weekend, Andre the Giant versus Big John Studd. The Undertaker at Mankind, Hell in a Cell, 1997. It might not be that brutal, but you have two big giant behemoths that are just going to be wailing on each other. Should be interesting. And real quick, because I know people are asking. Yeah, they are. How do I watch the NCAA tournament? I've always liked, if you're an actor, if you're Denzel, if you're Tom Hanks, if you're Morgan Freeman, if you're Leonardo DiCaprio, if you're one of those guys, right? How do you watch a movie? I mean, can you be suspended like us regular folks? Or when do you watch the movie, do you take a look at the character? If you're Tom Hanks, do you take a look at the character in the movie and say, that was pretty interesting the way he played that. I probably in this situation would have gone for this type of emotion, or I would have played it out this way. If you're Robert De Niro and you're watching a movie, can you watch it like the rest of us in terms of getting caught up in the plot and this, that, and the other? If you're Spike or if you're Martin Scorsese and you're watching it from a director standpoint, do you watch the movie just for the fun of it, or do you watch it and say, man, you know, in that, I would have taken that shot, or I would have done it this way, or I would have set that camera that way, or I would have told that actress to give me a little bit more emotion and this, that, and the other. So when I watch March Madness, and I've been doing this for the last 10 years, everything is Georgetown-centric. Everything is about my Georgetown Hoyas. So I watch every single game that I play, and I say to myself, yeah, they would have stomped us. But damn it, why? Why couldn't we get Zach Edey? What was the situation? What was the reason? Damn it, why didn't we get DJ Burns? Damn it, that guy transferred over from that school. Why didn't we go after him? Damn it, Randy Shannon, we were after him. He was in our final six in terms of when he was in high school determining where he was going to go to a college. When he transferred from Texas Tech, why didn't he come back to Georgetown? What made him go to Illinois? Damn it. Damn it. I might take a look at, like, Grand Canyon. How can Grand Canyon be in the NCAA tournament and we're not? James Madison? James Madison, that's right down I-95 from us. How are they getting better players than we are? I know Blacksburg, Virginia. That's Virginia Tech, right? James Madison is, I know it's in Virginia. I've been through it, but it's in one of those small Virginian towns, right? Right, like it's like another Roanoke. It's like another Blacksburg. It's like another, it's like, how in the world, how can you not convince, how could James Madison get this guy to go to that podunk town for college, and we couldn't get him to go to Georgetown with that education that we can get, the degree that you can get, that he can walk down M Street? The fact that you've got Howard University right down the street, which has the most beautiful and attractive black women in America going there. The most beautiful, the most educated, the most well-rounded. When you speak about beauty, when you speak about intelligence, when you speak about what makes a Nubian princess, we've got Howard University right over in Northwest D.C. That's a doggone, that's a, That's a subway ride over there. And they're going to James Madison? Grand Canyon is getting better players than we are? Oakland is getting better players than we are? Come on, Patrick. What are you doing, man? Come on, Ed. Let's get it together. Hire one of the assistants from Team Takeover, and let's get the ball rolling. Because, man, I was just going through all my Georgetown sites saying, have they got anybody? Have anybody from the transfer portal? Are they in touch with anybody? What's going on with the assistant head coaching job since Ivan Thomas took the head coaching job at Hampton? What's going on? What's happening? So, yeah, most of my attention when I'm watching college basketball is focused on, damn it, how could Georgetown not be there? But we will. We will, bitches. We will. We will. We will. I will speak it, pray it, hope it into existence. Let me see. I want to talk about the NFL free agency and the NFL draft. Coming back after my boogie break. A lot of news, a lot of notes, and there's a quarterback who's all over the place. Because every time when we have the NFL draft, right, there's always one quarterback who comes out of nowhere, and all of a sudden now he's going to be drafted in the top three, and then maybe he's not drafted at all, but he kind of gets, it's the mystery quarterback in terms of where he's going to go, what's going to happen. So all of those things, who won NFL free agency, all of those things I'm going to discuss after I get down in boogie. Wendell Wallace, Wendell's World, go Georgetown! Wendell's World in Sports.
You're leaving for another. Our love is at an end. You tell me love is over, but you say we'll still be friends. Remember me, the one who heard you cry, reached out and dried your eyes. Be the one who found you and left all my love around. When you were all alone and all your dreams were gone, you had nothing but a distant face. I took you in. Now you're broke.
Wendell's World in Sports. I'm your host, Wendell Wallace. So glad that you could be with us. I like this version more than I do the Temptations. Remember me, the one who heard you cry, reached down and dried your eyes. That is that was sung. Ivy Joe Wood sung that for the Temptations. Just like he sung a couple of songs for the Four Tops and Levi Stubbs to sing. So that was a good version. Like that version. You can only hear that version on YouTube, but there you go. Wendell's World of Sports. I'm your host, Wendell Wallace. So glad that you could be with us. NFL offseason, still moving along, still in full swing. Went through free agency, now getting ready for the draft, coming up in late April from Detroit. Notable players on the move and now on new teams. You had Justin Fields, you had Kirk Cousins and Russell Wilson and King, Derrick Henry, Saquon Barkley, Brian Burns going from Carolina to the New York Giants, Christian Wilkins joining the Las Vegas Raiders from Miami, Keenan Allen moving from the Los Angeles Chargers to the Chicago Bears, Josh Jacobs joining, who did Josh Jacobs go to, Minnesota? Green Bay, because Aaron Jones went to Minnesota, and then Jerry Jeudy also traded teams. Teams that are going to be looking for quarterbacks or are going to have new quarterbacks, starting quarterbacks next season. Chicago, I'm quite sure they're going to draft Caleb Williams and put him in there. Washington, Jaden Daniels or Drake May. I don't know. I saw one mock draft from a reputable mock draft expert who's speaking about they're going to draft J.J. McCarthy, though. If my Washington Commanders draft J.J. McCarthy, I don't know. I don't know. They know more than I do, so I don't know. I will be surprised. New England, they let Mac Jones go, or they traded Mac Jones, so they're looking for another quarterback. Atlanta, of course, they signed Kirk Cousins. Pittsburgh, of course, they not only signed Russell Wilson, but also made a trade, a sixth-round pick for Justin Fields. The Las Vegas Raiders, they signed Gardner Minshew. Denver is going to be looking for a new quarterback. Minnesota is going to be looking for a new quarterback. So it'll be interesting moving forward. Of course, as I mentioned before, the Pittsburgh Steelers moving around, rearranging their quarterback room, acquired Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. Wilson signed a veteran minimum contract of $1.2 million. But don't worry, Russell Wilson and Ciara fans, he'll be able to keep them jewels. He'll be able to keep her happy because he's also going to collect $38 million from the Broncos for not playing for them this season. Justin Fields, the Steelers got him for a 2025 sixth-round pick that could be upgraded to a fourth if Fields plays more than 51% of the snaps in 2024. And I thought it was a good deal by all. I know people are trashing it like, man, you know what? You could have a sixth-round pick. That's it? A sixth-round pick for Justin Fields, a guy who started this, that, and the other? Well, I mean, the writing was on the wall that, A, Chicago was not going to keep him. And B, if you're Chicago and Brian Poole, the GM, was like, look, we want to do right by Justin Fields, they put him in a really good situation. They put him with a good organization. And I know it's a situation where, you know, the Chicago Bears are in no position, or Chicago Bears have no reason to do that. If they want to trade him to one of the worst teams in the league, then that's their prerogative. But I think in terms of when you're playing this game of football, playing it in the NFL football, playing it in the NFL, a situation where, look, man, other players are taking a look and seeing what's happening. Potential free agent players. Maybe not this year, but a couple of years down the line. And if they see that this is an organization that's going to treat his players right, even if it means that they're no longer going to be with them, I mean, I think that comes into a situation where if you're trying to decide between the Chicago Bears and other teams on where you want to spend three, four, five, maybe the rest of your career with a football team, something like that could come into play. Something like that could make the difference. Now, yes, money, whether the girlfriend or the wife likes it, whether it has good schooling and all those other things are going to come into play. But also, if it comes down to, you know, splitting hairs, a situation where, hey, you know what? I saw how the Chicago Bears, a team that I'm interested in, I saw how they treated Justin Fields. I kind of like that situation of, you know, the fact that they look out for the player, that it could come into play. What does it mean for the Steelers moving forward with this? I think it's an upgrade. Kenny Pickett didn't like the idea that when Russell Wilson was signed, because the situation was, hey, this is going to be a quarterback competition. If you remember, Pickett was the starter last season for the Steelers. Then he got injured. Mason Rudolph came in, played much better because Mitchell Trubisky was trash when given the opportunity. So Mason Rudolph came in, played well, and when Kenny Pickett was ready to come back in, or when Kenny Pickett was healthy enough to regain his starting quarterback position, the Steelers were like, nah, we're good. Mason Rudolph is doing a thing. So it's a situation where, hey, it's time for Kenny Pickett to put on the big boy pants and start acting like an adult in terms of, we're going to have some competition. First, they thought it was going to be Mason Rudolph, and Mason Rudolph said, no, thank you. And he went to the Tennessee Titans to back up Will Levis. But it was a situation where the Steelers were then looking for a quarterback to compete with Kenny Pickett. They saw there was an availability to get Russell Wilson. They didn't tell Russell Wilson the fact that he was going to be the starter when they were recruiting him. That was one of the things that they did not mention. But Kenny Pickett took it in terms of, well, if you're going to go out and get someone as established as a starting quarterback as Russell Wilson, then what are my chances of regaining my starting quarterback position? And the Steelers were like, well, you're going to have to work for it. This is not going to be a situation where it's already set in stone that that Russell Wilson is going to be the starting quarterback, but you're going to have to earn it. Unlike last season, we ain't going to give you anything. And Kenny Pickett didn't want to do that, so Kenny Pickett expressed his desire to go somewhere else, and then the Steelers said, all right, fuck you. We'll send you over to the Philadelphia Eagles. Have a good time backing up Jalen Hurts for the next 6, 7, 8 years. But so Russell Wilson comes in. Now you have a situation in Chicago where you're going to need another quarterback. Russell Wilson being 35 years old, I don't know what other quarterback you have on the roster that's really going to do some things. And they saw the situation to get themselves possibly a reclamation project in Justin Fields. They got him on the cheap. And now is a situation where, okay, the quarterback room has been improved. I think Russell Wilson and Justin Fields are a better tandem than Kenny Pickett and Mitchell Trubisky. Situation now is that, okay, so what does that really mean moving forward for the next year or two or three? Is Russell Wilson, again, who's signed on the cheap, one-year contract. Is Russell Wilson going to be a bridge quarterback to Justin Fields? Is this a situation where, look, the Steelers still have themselves a really good defense, but they haven't really made some moves. They really haven't done anything. They really haven't made any type of splash or any type of impact in terms of winning football games in the playoffs in a while now. So this is a situation where I don't know. I don't think the coaching seat is hot for Mike Tomlin, but it's also a situation where the Rooneys and others are expecting a little bit more in terms of, hey, look, man, you know, not making the playoffs or bowing out early in the playoffs, that ain't cutting it no more. We're going to need a little bit more. We're going to need to see a little bit more. The expectations are going to be a little bit higher this season. So with Russell Wilson, does he provide you that? Does Justin Fields then provide you the long-term answer for the Steelers? If you remember, Kenny Pickett came after a long stint by Ben Roethlisberger. And one of the things that the Steelers didn't do, especially in the last couple of years of Roethlisberger being a quarterback, is they didn't get themselves another quarterback with a realistic chance to be ready when Roethlisberger finally retired. They didn't do what the Green Bay Packers did by drafting Aaron Rodgers when Brett Favre was still doing his thing, or draft themselves a Jordan Love when Aaron Rodgers was still doing his thing. So this wasn't a situation where the Steelers made any type of continuation plan, continuity plan, once Brendan Roethlisberger was either going to be on the decline or when he retired. So they were left, as we say, in a pickle when Roethlisberger retired. Because when they had to go with Mason Rudolph, there wasn't a homegrown quarterback with the understanding that this was going to be the next guy in line. Have they fulfilled that in a small way by going out and using Russell Wilson for a year with the understanding that, you know what, Justin, not take a year off, but, you know, expectations are low. We're not asking you to come in and save the day. You're not going to be the franchise quarterback. You're not going to be the one that's going to turn the organization around, unlike when he was drafted by the Chicago Bears. Oh, my goodness gracious, we got ourselves possibly the best quarterback that we've ever had in franchise history. We have to go all the way back to Sid Luckman back in the 40s for the Chicago Bears. When you speak about a great, great quarterback, Jim McMahon wasn't that quarterback. Rex Grossman wasn't that quarterback. Jay Cutler wasn't that quarterback. Bobby Evans wasn't that quarterback. So Justin Fields came in with the expectation that he was going to erase decades and decades and decades of decent, mediocre, below average, bad quarterbacking to be that guy. And it wasn't the case. It wasn't the case at all. So now it's going to be a situation, I think, moving forward, where it's going to be interesting to see what's going to be happening moving forward in terms of the continuation plan while the Steelers try to continue what they're doing. So I'm taking a look at that. Also, when you speak about the Atlanta Falcons went out and got themselves a quarterback in Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins can play the game, man. In terms of the free agency game, in terms of the getting paid game, I mean, how much money has Kirk Cousins got for basically being a good starting quarterback in the league? That's what he is. He's a good starting quarterback in the league. But, man, he's being paid like he's just a tier below Mahomes, Allen, and Joe Burrow. But he leaves Minnesota. He's now going to be going to the Atlanta Falcons. What did that mean for them moving forward? Look, Desmond Ridder was not going to be the answer. Raheem Morris, the new coach for the Atlanta Falcons, said that as much. Didn't make any bones about it in terms of, yeah, Atlanta could have been a playoff team, especially when you're speaking about the division that they were in. But the quarterback play sucked. So they went out, signed him to a four-year, $100 million contract, speaking about Cousins. And they got a lot better. They got a lot better. Look, since being in the league in 2012, Cousins, 7th in the NFL in touchdown passes. He's 9th in completion percentage, 11th in passer rating. He's 14th in passing yards per game, 15th in yards per attempt, 17th in touchdown to interception ratio, all among quarterback with more than 250 yards, 50 passing attempts. Now, does that sound like somebody who's going to lead a team to a Super Bowl? And also, when you speak about early in his career when he was with my Commanders, before they became the Commanders, when he replaced RG3, I mean, here was a guy, even then moving forward to Minnesota, who always had questions, who always had that weakness, or always had that moniker of the guy that couldn't win the big game. That was Kirk Cousins. And really, over the years, with the exception of one game in overtime when they beat Drew Brees in Atlanta, Drew Brees in New Orleans on the road, that really hasn't changed. That narrative hadn't changed. It shouldn't change because he hadn't done anything really since then. So, okay, again, there's a situation like Pittsburgh. Yeah. Did Atlanta get better when signing Kirk Cousins? Yeah. Did they get the best quarterback available? Yeah, they did. But what does that mean moving forward? When you're speaking about a guy who's in his mid-30s, the commitment from Minnesota wasn't there for a multi-year deal. And that's one of the reasons why he said, well, you know, Vikings, see ya. Not really interested in a one-year deal, that type of deal. But take a look. Are they better than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers who re-signed Baker Mayfield? If you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers who not only re-signed Baker Mayfield, but also re-signed Mike Evans, are they still going to remain the top team in the very weak NFC South? Because Carolina ain't going to do anything. Last time I checked, the New Orleans Saints still had David Carr as a quarterback. So when you really think about it, the teams that are going to be vying for that championship in the NFC South are going to be the Atlanta Falcons and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Is that what you're paying Kirk Cousins $100 million to do? To get them to win a conference championship? Because I don't see them moving forward after that. I think it's going to be an advantageous situation as far as Cousins being the quarterback for guys like Drake London and Bijan Robinson and Kyle Pitts. I mean, I think they'll be better players. He has a very good offensive line, Robinson from the running back position, the new coach, so they can better utilize the talent. But moving forward, I don't know. It's a situation where you're kicking the can down the road. Should Atlanta really concentrate, try to move up to secure one of the quarterbacks? We don't know what we're getting. Caleb Williams is going to be gone after the Bears. Bears select him first. So you're going to be taking a look at a situation where, okay, we've got Jaden Daniels possibly, we've got Drake May possibly, and we've got J.J. McCarthy possibly. We kind of already know what we have in Kirk Cousins. There's enough body of work, there's enough evidence to see this is the type of quarterback that he's going to be. We have nothing in terms of evidence of what J.J. McCarthy or Drake May or Jalen Daniels is going to be. So we don't know. We don't know. So should we go with the known thing and try to maximize what we've got now from our young skill players? Or should we draft a team that possibly might be able to grow with the young talent and have them emerge, hopefully, in 2 to 3 years? Do we have the stomach for that? Do we have the program set up for that? So those are some of the situations I think that the Atlanta Falcons were speaking about when they finally made the decision to say, hey, man, let's maximize what we've got when we've got a lot of these guys, London, Pitts, Robinson, still on rookie contracts. Let's see what we can do in the next couple of years to really maximize what we got before we make a decision on who should be making the money. Basically, you're not going to be able to keep all of them. Kirk Cousins at $100 million, if he's still going to be on the team, for the most part, you're not going to be able to pay if they reach. If Pitts, Robinson, London reach the potential that the Atlanta Falcons organization hoped that they fulfill, they're not going to be able to keep all of them. So that's another one thing going forward. I know Saquon Barkley signed with the Philadelphia Eagles. Interesting in terms of where do we go from here regarding that. You know, with Kelce now retiring, what type of move is that going to be? What does that mean also for the New York Giants and Daniel Jones moving forward? Also, Derrick Henry signs with the Baltimore Ravens. I don't know. I mean, this is a situation. Yeah, he signed a 2-year deal for $16 million. $9 million of that is going to be guaranteed. Last season, led the league with 280 carries. And among the 49 backs with at least 100 carries, Derek finished 8th in average yards per carry after contact per rush. So Is he slowing down? Yeah. How much is he slowing down? Maybe not as much as we first anticipated. But, man, does this make the Baltimore Ravens now, the signing of Derrick Henry and the re-signing of Justin Madubuike, does that solidify the Ravens as the main competition for the Kansas City football team moving forward? How much hangover is Baltimore going to have? Because now this is a situation in Baltimore. After the season that you had last season, nothing else really matters except doing some things in the playoffs. I don't give a damn. Baltimore doesn't give a damn. Lamar Jackson doesn't give a damn. Harbaugh doesn't give a damn. The owner, Biscotti, doesn't give a damn. If the Ravens go 17-0 and win every single game 116-3, and Lamar Jackson throws for 8,000 yards, 200 touchdowns, and only 3 interceptions, 2 of those being end-of-the-half Hail Marys, they don't give a damn if Derrick Henry next season runs for 5,000 yards and scores 49 touchdowns. It doesn't matter. They don't care. It doesn't matter in the regular season if Trey Flowers catches 134 passes for 3,622 yards and 25 touchdowns. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the Ravens look like they're playing Madden on rookie status with a stacked squad. It doesn't matter. Everything is going to be pointing toward what's going to be happening in the playoffs. So after a year of wear and tear, how much is going to be left to Derrick Henry when the Ravens get into the playoffs? And what's going to be happening now with the reemergence of Cincinnati? Joe Burrow going to be coming back? Quite sure, even though T. Higgins is talking about trade me, there's no inclination of that yet. The Steelers have themselves a new quarterback. Kansas City still has Patrick Mahomes. Deshaun Watson, I don't know what the makeup of him is going to be coming back, but Cleveland is still going to have a strong defense. So moving forward, did Baltimore blow his best chance under this squad, under this era, to get themselves into the Super Bowl? So, and is it just a matter of, hey, we signed Derrick Henry, and that's going to be putting us over the top? So I don't know, especially after the strides that Lamar Jackson made as a quarterback, as a true quarterback, as more of a traditional quarterback, throwing from the pocket, reading defenses, and also replacing their defensive coordinator, Mike McDonald, who went on to become the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. You know, Mike McDonald, minute by minute by minute, he kept moving on to Seattle. So he's going to be taking it to the streets, and I don't know any other Doobie Brothers references. So, whoa, it's the music. Okay, enough, I'm sorry. So, but yeah, so all of those things are going to be playing into when you speak about it. So, look, Kansas City, I still think once the power rankings are still over, it, with free agency, we really don't know. This is not going to be a situation where, aha, now we know which team is going to be doing this, that, and the other, and this, that, and the other, because they obtained this guy, or they lost that guy, or same thing with the draft. We're going to be seeing this once the draft is over. Aha! Now, since the Detroit Lions had themselves a banner of a draft, now they're really going to be contenders for the Super Bowl. I don't, bullshit. I don't need to hear any of that stuff. Look, after free agency, the Kansas City football team, still the best team in the league. We re-signed Chris Jones, even though they lost Jarius Sneed to traded him to Tennessee. But they re-signed Chris Jones to a 5-year contract, $158 million. With $60 million fully guaranteed. The only, in terms of the biggest need, I believe, especially on the offensive end, wide receiver, the only free agent acquisition that they made concerning that was Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown, formerly of the Baltimore Ravens. I don't know what's going to be happening, who they're going to be drafting in a loaded wide receiver draft class, but I'm quite sure that the football team from Kansas City, professional football team from Kansas City, is going to be focusing on that. But look, the teams that are good after free agency, the teams that were good before free agency, are still good. They're still Super Bowl contenders. San Francisco, even though they lost Chase Young, still good. Detroit kept their offensive and defensive coordinator. They're still going to be good. Baltimore, still good. Buffalo, despite losing Gabe Davis, still good. Green Bay, despite losing Aaron Jones, still good. Tennessee, still good. Philadelphia, still good. Houston, still good. So, you know, the major the major free agency move that some other team might have made, Pittsburgh still on the outside looking in despite rearranging their quarterback situation and all this type of stuff. The Eagles, you know, Saquon Barkley, fantastic, this, that, and the other. Still doesn't move the needle for them to get closer to San Francisco or Detroit as of right now. Have to wait till the season starts. Season gets into a full swing before we start doing those things. Real quickly, the latest news from the NFL draft is the rise of Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy. Multiple teams over the past couple of weeks have ranked him ahead of North Carolina's Drake May. Some of the strengths, if you don't know anything about J.J. McCarthy, plenty of experience working under center in a pro-style passing scheme, had the ability to locate throwing windows versus zones, makes drives, I don't know, he had a lot of strengths. Delivers the ball smoothly on rollouts and scramble mode, toughness to deliver throws when taking a hit, and squeeze out extra yards as a runner. The weaknesses, sluggish, getting through progressions and can get stuck on the first read. Modest arm strength might be magnified by wind up in his delivery. Average escapability as a runner when scrambling. So, I don't know, man. I mean, like I mentioned before, Washington was in one of these mock drafts were talking about selecting him. So, I don't know. I'll give you a little bit more as we move forward with the NFL draft. Again, most of it is going to be concentrated on the quarterback position. Again, Caleb Williams looked like he's going to be the guy in terms of who's going to be drafted number one. Then the intrigue is going to be 2, 3, and then where does J.J. McCarthy go? What are the Minnesota Vikings? What are the Denver Broncos going to do moving forward to get themselves a quarterback? So all of that stuff we will discuss coming up in a later podcast. But the NBA is right around the corner. The finish of the NBA, my Layla Roshan, my Halle Berry, my Vivica A. Fox back in her heyday, the love of my life, my favorite league when you're speaking about the NBA. It is almost done. It is almost done. So we'll do a quick recap of the Eastern Conference standings, the Western Conference standings, some of the major storylines for the final 8 games left. We'll do all that stuff to end the program, end the podcast right here on Wendell's World in Sports. Last segment of the program. Welcome to Wendell's World of Sports. Thank you so much for listening. Hope everybody is enjoying. Of course, I'll be putting these out weekly, unless my cold gets worse or takes a turn for the worse, in which case I won't. So if like a month or two go by and you don't hear anything from me, I'm probably either in the hospital or in the grave. So there you go. Just want to let you get your heads up on that. So macabre. Wendell's World of Sports. I'm your host, Wendell Wallace. So glad that you could be with us. About 8 games left to go. I'm recording this again on a Tuesday morning. The scuttlebutt is Joel Embiid is going to return and play tonight against the Oklahoma City Thunder. He's missed a ton of games because of a surgery to his meniscus on his knee. Let me just go ahead. Final weeks of the season because the NBA playoffs start on the 14th of April. In the Eastern Conference, of course, Boston, number one, already clinched everything in terms of the number one seed, home court advantage throughout the conference playoffs, 59-16. Despite losing 2 in a row to Milwaukee, including blowing a 30-point lead, not really going to jump up and down and say, oh, ho, ho, ho. No, that's not that okay. Milwaukee Bucks, second in the Eastern Conference, 47-27. Third, the Cleveland Cavaliers, 45-30. The fourth place, New York Knicks, 44-32. Brutal losses to San Antonio on the road and at home against Oklahoma City. And yes, Jalen Brunson was fouled by Lou Dort. That would have tied the game. That would have allowed the jumper by Shai Gilgeous-Alexander over on the left baseline to just tie the game instead of win the game for the Oklahoma City Thunder. But, you know, in the NBA today, refereeing has been substandard. Number five, the Orlando Magic, 43-31. And number six-seeded Indiana Pacers are 42-33. The play-in tournament includes the number seven-seeded Miami Heat sitting at 41-33. The returning Joel Embiid with the Philadelphia 76ers are in eighth with a 40-35 record. The Chicago Bulls, 39-36, some pretty decent wins, especially the one over Minnesota this weekend. They're the number nine seed. They're in the play-in tournament, 36-39, while the number 10 seeded and last to be in the play-in tournament, the Atlanta Hawks, are 34-40. So in the play-in tournament, you've got Miami, Philadelphia, Chicago, and the Atlanta Hawks. In the Western Conference, the Oklahoma City Thunder are the number one seed, 52-22, half game lead over the Denver Nuggets, 52-23. The Minnesota Timberwolves are the number three seed with a record of 51-23. The Los Angeles Clippers, number four, 47-27. The red hot Dallas Mavericks, the number five seed, 45-29 record. The number six seeded New Orleans Pelicans, New Orleans in Orlando, I can't get a read on these guys, man. Every time I think they're going one way, they go the other. And Zion, could you please start rebounding? Yeah, man, I'm glad that you're healthy. I'm glad that you got yourself in shape. And on offense, you're a beast. An absolute beast. But for heaven's sakes, man, get a rebound. The other night, who were they playing? It was on NBA TV. Age of the bitch. I forgot that who they were playing, but I was sitting up there mesmerized because Zion acts like a point guard. Zion acts like he's TJ McConnell. Zion acts like he's the most meekest, weakest person on the court when a shot goes up and he's on the defensive side of the court. The man does not go near the rim for a defensive rebound. Not even near it. Doesn't even think about it. Doesn't even look at the rim. How can you be... got me all choked up. How can you be as big and strong as you are and not get at least 10, 11 rebounds per game? The other night, he got two. He scored 30 points and got two rebounds. Two. Unacceptable. A guy that big, a guy that athletic. How you should be getting eight just walking into the arena. Two? And he's averaging, what, five or six rebounds a game? From one of the most physically imposing players in our game today? Five, six rebounds? Mariah Mills, would you talk to him? And so the New Orleans Pelicans are the number six seed, 43-31. In the play-in tournament, we've got the Sacramento Kings. They're facing all type of injuries. I don't know. Malik Monk now has an MCL tear. Kevin Herter's injured. So I don't know about my Mike Brown Sacramento Kings. The number eight seed are the Phoenix Suns. Another team that scratches my head. They're 43-31. Another team that has me scratch my head. I don't want KD or Bradley Beal or Devin Booker coming over here and scratching my head. Now, if Devin Booker wants to bring in Kylie Jenner and she can scratch her head with some of that money that she has and give it to me, I'll be happy with that. But I'm not going to get too deep into that one. The number 8 seed or the number 9 seed, the Los Angeles Lakers, 42-33. The number 10 seed, the Golden State Warriors, 40-34. So the play-in tournament you would have in the Western Conference, Sacramento, Phoenix, L.A., Golden State. And despite losing the other night, the Houston Rockets are still also in playoff contention. So when you speak about the main storyline for the final part of the season, basically when you take a look at the Eastern Conference, I'm looking at the standings between number two and number six, which would include Milwaukee, Cleveland, the Knicks, Orlando, and Indiana. What is it going to look like? Because, again, there's a situation where there's an opening for the New York Knicks. There's an opening for the Orlando Magic in terms of where they can be seeding-wise. Milwaukee's number two. They're 2.5 games ahead of Cleveland, 3 games ahead of New York, and 4 games ahead of the Orlando Magic. Did you see that loss to the Lakers where they were playing without LeBron? That fourth quarter that the Bucks had? Terrible. Terrible. Then they lost to the Pelicans before turning things around and beating Atlanta on Saturday. But Chris Middleton, I think, still remains the key. Has played in 4 games. He's averaging 13.7 rebounds, 7 assists. Here's the deal, though. He's averaging almost 34 minutes a game. He's got to get better. He's got to keep working. Now, tonight against my Wizards, Damian Lillard, who has a sprained groin or has a groin injury, groin injury, he's not going to be playing, but still, just, I think it's more of a precautionary type of deal. Giannis is still playing like a monster, hitting a lot, being more consistent with the free throw shooting too, which I think is going to bode well as they move in. So, Milwaukee's at number two. Cleveland, man, I don't know, man. I don't believe in the Cleveland Cavaliers. I really don't. I still don't believe in Donovan Mitchell as being the number one guy. They're at the 3 seed. But, you know, ever since Max Strus and Donovan Mitchell have come back to the Cavs lineup since last week, Cleveland's only 9-13 since the All-Star break, and they lost to Charlotte last week, which was kind of like, really? So, look, Mitchell returning from a 6-game absence on Friday, I mean, you could say, yeah, he needs to get, you know, get the game legs going and shake off the rust, but he's just 7-25. Against the Sixers and the Nuggets over the weekend. And he's only 9-31 in the paint since the All-Star game. So, I don't know. Darius Garland's been in and out. You got Evan Mobley back. And the remnants still remain in my mind of how basically the Cleveland Cavaliers were physically punked by the New York Knicks. And I'm also going to be interested in this, I don't know, this Donovan Mitchell situation in terms of, does he want to be in Cleveland? Does he want to go to the New York Knicks? I mean, so if things start to tumble a little bit, I think that there's some resuscitation in terms of big game Donovan, which he showed when he was with the Utah Jazz, especially in the bubble, in that series that they had in the bubble against the Denver Nuggets at the time, where he was hitting big shot after big shot. Donovan Mitchell is an absolutely beautiful player. Awesome player. A player to behold when he's hitting his hero shots. The only problem is, when he's not hitting his hero shots, he's one of the more, I don't want to use the word ugly, but he just makes the game look not as aesthetically pleasing. Because he's just taking these ridiculous shots and you're like, what are you doing? What was that? Again, when it's going down, beautiful. But when it's not, not very good. And those hero shots that he takes, how can you have any consistency with that? That shit ain't going to work in the playoffs. So, again, have we kind of figured out what's going on with Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell, that tandem of their playing together? Now, I know the your turn, my turn stuff was kind of put on, was lessened, especially when Cleveland was one of the hottest teams right before the All-Star break, but there's no continuity. You know, in and out with the lineups and such. So, I don't know. I don't know what Bernie Bickerstaff, the J.B. Bickerstaff, is going to do moving forward in this situation. And still, I think you got the Donovan Mitchell situation still hanging its head. And when you speak about Cleveland, who's 4-8 on the road since the All-Star break before they were 17-8, and you got games after getting blown out against Denver, you still have that west of the Mississippi trip still going on where you're going to be playing Utah, you're going to be playing Phoenix, the Lakers and the Clippers. Now, they should beat Utah, who's in full tank mode. But Phoenix has something to play for. The Lakers have something to play for. And the Clippers have something to play for. All on the road in terms of the Cavaliers. You could be looking at a situation where if the dominoes fall correctly for certain teams, could Cleveland be ending this road trip on Sunday in fifth place? in the Eastern Conference. The New York Knicks, the number four seed in the East. As I mentioned before, two brutal losses against the Spurs. Wembanyama goes for 40 and 20, seven assists. Then they lost at home on a last-second shot against Oklahoma City. Jalen Brunson, man, incredible. Incredible. The man what scored. I was reading the box score. Or I was taking a look at the game, and I saw that the Spurs won. So I checked Wembanyama. Oh, 40 and 20. That's pretty good. Then I saw Brunson, 61. And I was like, I had to readjust my glasses. It's like 61? 61% shooting? No, 61 points. 61 points on 47 shot attempts against San Antonio. And then he made the go-ahead layup again. He was fouled by Lou Dort. But he made the go-ahead layup against OKC before SGA's final shot. So my deal with the New York Knicks, again, it's a similar situation in terms of I don't believe in them because I don't know exactly when Julius Randle and OG and Anobi are going to be back. I just don't. So with the loss to the Thunder on Thursday, the Knicks have the worst record, 6-17, playing against teams that are in the top 10 in the league in terms of record-wise is concerned. So how good are the New York Knicks? How good are the New York Knicks now when you have Jalen Brunson having to carry such a load? I mean, yeah, Dante DiVincenzo is coming. He's played well. Josh Hart now is starting to become Luka-like, Yoka-like in terms of getting triple-doubles. But still, this is a situation where you're asking Jalen Brunson to do a lot, and we don't know when Randle's going to be coming back. We don't know when OG and Anobi is going to be coming back. Look, in those games that I just mentioned, in terms of the Knicks being 6-17 against teams that are good, teams that are playoff contenders, with Anobi in the lineup, the Knicks are 2-1 against those teams. But that's the problem. He hasn't been in the lineup. He's missed 25 of the last 28 games. He's missed now 7 games in a row. When is he going to be coming back? When is Julius Randle going to be coming back? So for the Knicks, I don't know. I don't know what's going to be happening. Orlando is another team, up and down, inconsistent. But, yeah, all of this might be fait accompli in terms of who cares because Boston is so above everybody else in the Eastern Conference. Yeah, I know Porzingis has been nicked up a little bit, but I think Boston, again, is their conference to win. In the Western Conference, has the Dallas Mavericks emerged as a legitimate threat in the Western Conference? Wendell, what do you mean by legitimate threat? I'm glad you asked. I'm speaking about being conference champions. You mean beating Denver? I mean beating Denver. I'm not saying that they're beating Denver, but if they continue to play at this level, they've won 11 of their last 12 games, 7 straight wins, are the longest active winning streak in the league since they beat up on the Houston Rockets, who had an 11-game winning streak on Sunday. Hey, man, Luka, I'm telling you, Luka, finally the light is starting to come on. Finally, Luka's starting to get it. What's the man now, 24, 25 years old? The man is now starting to get it in terms of he's playing defense. He's not whining and crying as much to the referees. Because, again, when he would come down and he felt that he would get fouled, what would he would do? He would yell. He would loaf at the referees while the other team was bringing the ball back in transition. Luka has calmed that down significantly. And when he's making those step-back three-point shots, which has become much more of a consistent weapon for him, forget it. Party's over, my man. It's Jokic, it's Luka, it's Giannis in terms of an SGA, in terms of the MVP is concerned. And outside of Jokic, who I think is the best player in the league right now, 2, 3, 4, between Luka, Giannis, and SGA, you can put them any way that you want, man. You know, it's a situation where it's kind of like if you're going to be talking about who's the MVP? Is it going to be Luka or is it going to be Giannis? It's like, well, who do you think is sexier? 1992 Halle Berry, 1992 Selma Hayek. You're not going to go wrong with either one. You're not going to go wrong with either choice. And that's the same thing with the with Luka in the way that he's playing right now. He has finally matured. He's now got himself a personal chef to keep himself in shape, to keep him on the discipline of being an NBA superstar. And we know. And one of the main reasons why I say that the Dallas Mavericks have a real shot of causing some damage in the playoffs is because we've seen Luka do it before. We've seen Luka elevate his game even more during the playoffs. Do you remember the performance that he had when he was in the bubble. When you think about the performance that he had in that seven-game series, Game 7 against the Phoenix Suns. Luka, who outside of Denver is always going to be the best player on the floor, had the ability to put the team on his back and lead them to a series victory. And now you also have Kyrie Irving and that duo. You're speaking about, I think Kyrie now is starting to become a lot more comfortable and a lot more understanding that, you know what? I think he realizes that he's a lot better Robin than he is Batman. He tried being Batman when he recruited Kevin Durant to play with him in Brooklyn. And if you take a look at the success, and if you take a look at what Kyrie's role has been when he's been at his best, it's been playing that Robin role. When he tried to do the Batman role when he went to Boston, when he tried to do the Batman role when he went to Brooklyn, things didn't end up very well. But if you remember when he was Robin to LeBron's Batman, yeah, he got a little bit tired of that. But guess what? Led them to a championship, helped them win a championship. I think that now, if he's comfortable saying, hey, man, it's Luka's team, and I'm just going to be the Scottie Pippen to the Michael Jordan, or I'm going to be the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to the Magic Johnson, I'm going to be the Kevin McHale to the Larry Bird, I'm going to be the Dwayne Wade to the LeBron James, I'm going to be the Jamal Murray to the Nikola Jokic, I think that, you know, it's a situation where Dallas can be a real threat. They're starting to play a lot better defense. When Dallas was really struggling at a point after the All-Star game, they weren't playing any defense. In a situation now, you have Dante Exum, who's a very good defensive player, Derrick Jones Jr., not only a very good defensive player, but also can catch lobs off of Luka's passes when the defense concentrates on him. And the way Luka is playing, I think that he stepped up his game a little bit more. Watch out for the Dallas Mavericks, man. Watch out. I'm not saying that they're going to be the conference champions, but I'm saying if you ask me Denver or the field, and you pick the field, and you say, okay, from the field, which one from the field, which team from the field had the best chance to represent the field in defeating the Denver Nuggets, and it wouldn't be the Los Angeles Clippers, it wouldn't be the Los Angeles Lakers, it wouldn't be the Minnesota Timberwolves, and it wouldn't be the Oklahoma City Thunder. As of right now, I'm going to say it's the Dallas Mavericks. We'll see what happens. And give it up for Kyrie, who I thought by now would be imploding. I thought Brian Nabel, who would be making life hell for Jason Kidd and Luka Doncic and anybody in that organization. He's been fantastic. He's been awesome. Both as a player and as a teammate, he's been great. No distractions, no nonsense, no controversies. He's been great. And again, here's a guy who's won a championship. Here's a guy who maybe hit one of the most important shots in NBA history when you speak about that three right side game seven against the Golden State Warriors. So you have now a guy in Luka who can elevate any team, playing with a guy in Kyrie who's already won a championship and was an integral part of that championship and is still in a position with the responsibilities to be able to still make an impact on a team winning a championship. And the players surrounding him, surrounding that duo, and now that they're playing defense again, they're legit. As of right now, they are legit. Let me see. Denver, when you speak about Oklahoma City, when you speak about Denver, really doesn't matter to me in terms of who's going to be doing what, who's going to be coming in first. I think once Denver, you have to kind of speculate with Jamal Murray, make sure that he's all right, because he's missed the last five games, and Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets need Jamal Murray. I know that Reggie Jackson is a champion, or as Jokic would say, a champion. And, you know, he's a good backup, but you place him in that starting lineup role and ask him to play Jamal Murray minutes, if Murray can't go, that opens the door for a Dallas Mavericks team. That opens the door for an Oklahoma City Thunder team. That opens the door for a Los Angeles Clipper team, possibly. The one thing about the Clippers, not the Clippers, because you got Kawhi, who has shown also the consistency of elevating his game in the playoffs. But my thing now moves toward the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Minnesota Timberwolves, especially when you speak about Oklahoma City Thunder. You speak about, yeah, they're young and they, but they play so mature and this, that, and the other. Yeah, during the regular season, I want to see these guys doing in the playoffs. SGA is fantastic. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is fantastic. An awesome basketball player. Top five basketball player. MVP worthy basketball player. But let's see what he does in the playoffs. He's never been there before, for the most part. He's never had this role. He's never had this responsibility for a team that has the expectations now. They're far ahead of schedule, the Oklahoma City Thunder. But come on, man. If they don't make the conference finals at the very least, it would be a disappointment. Yeah, but they're so young and this, that, and the other. Those expectations now. They're ahead of schedule. Okay, that's fine. But that's all bullshit once you get into the playoffs and y'all start playing. If you lose in the second round, if you lose in the first round, that is a disappointment. Now, the future is not cloudy. They shouldn't make any drastic changes. But you could say with everything that they've done this season, everything that they showed this season, there is no excuse for them not making it at least to the conference finals. A lot of that's going to depend on SGA, and I just haven't seen it yet for me to say, oh yeah, without a doubt. The players that they're counting on have never been there. Are you really relying on Chet Holmgren to be the third best player on a team that's going to be a conference champion? Is Jalen Williams really that guy that's going to be the second best player to be the Robin? Is he truly going to be the Robin? Can SGA be a Batman in those situations? We haven't seen that yet. What about the situation with Josh Giddey in terms of now he's hitting a three-point shot? He's being a little bit more consistent where teams now have to guard him. What about the bench? What about the front court for Oklahoma City Thunder? What if they have to go up against a Minnesota Timberwolves squad? If they have to go up against a Los Angeles Lakers squad? If they have to go up against and bang against a Yusuf Nurkic for 5, 6, 7 games? The Minnesota Timberwolves squad that has, forget just Karl Anthony Towns, who's still recovering from injury, but not just Rudy Gobert, but also Naz Reid is a guy that supplies some girth in that situation. I mean, we're just relying mainly on Chet Holmgren to do that, to keep them at bay. Is he able to do that? What type of help is he going to get? Is the help going to be able to do so? The Minnesota Timberwolves. I think Anthony Edwards had a fantastic series against the Denver Nuggets last year. I'm interested to see him do it again before I start talking about the Minnesota Timberwolves being a real squad that's going to challenge the Denver Nuggets. And then you hit the play-in tournament. Is there going to be a possibility when everything is said and done with the play-in tournament that's going to be over and we're going to be starting the playoff that there's going to be a scenario where either LeBron, AD, Steph, Klay, KD, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker are not going to be participating? Because as I mentioned before, as of right now, those teams that I just mentioned, those players and the teams that I mentioned are playing in the play-in tournament. Yikes. And I think out of all of them, the Lakers now 3-1 on a 6-game road trip. They've won 6 of their last 7 overall, but they remain in 9th place in the West, 2 games in the loss column behind the 8th-place Spurs. The Warriors have won 4 straight games. Great, one of them was against Charlotte. Draymond getting kicked out, this, that, and the other. Anthony Wiggins playing better. But they're 2 games ahead over Houston in the play-in tournament. And then you have who I think is the most disappointing team, which is the Phoenix Suns. The Phoenix Suns have had Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal together now for 10 straight games. Over those 10 games, they're 6-4. One of those losses was the Victor Wembanyama-less San Antonio Spurs. Unacceptable. During that stretch, when Booker, Durant, and Bradley Beal have played, they've outscored their opponents by just 3 total points in 214 minutes that those three have played together. And now, in the 33 games that they played, Booker, Beal, and KD, the Suns are 20-13. So I think 33 games is a pretty decent enough sample size to see what we're getting here. And I don't know. That's what happens especially their woes in the fourth quarter. That's what happens when you don't have yourself a point guard. You need to get yourself a point guard. And I'm not talking about the best point guard out there. I mean, damn. This offseason, is there any way possibly you could get yourself a TJ McConnell, maybe even a fucking Chris Paul type of point guard, a traditional point guard, so you can take the ball out of Devin Booker, bringing Devin Booker's hands, bringing it up on a consistent basis? Because Devin Booker is a shooting guard. He's not a point guard. So there you go. All right, let me get on out of here. I want to thank you for listening to my podcast. Remember, iHeart, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon. Do what you need to do. Follow, rate, review. And as always, please, please do what we need to do to provide love, peace, unity, harmony, respect, intelligence, wisdom into our community. Again, I don't give a damn what you look like. I don't give a damn what your religion is. I don't give a damn about your gender. I don't give a damn about any of that. All I give a damn about is if you are a good person. That's all I care about. That's what we should be caring about. That's what we should be judging our brothers and sisters on. Not by how much money they have in their bank account, not by how much fame that they have, not by which god that they worship, not by what political affiliation that they're dealing with. Love, peace, unity, intelligence, wisdom, understanding, respect for others. That should be what we should look at when we speak about brotherhood, sisterhood, and all the good things. Get me out of here with some music.